أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبو القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Assalamualaikum brothers.
Thank you.
Inshallah, everything is well. Now, today we're taking a break on our discussion on Imam Khomeini's 40 hadith. Inshallah, we're going to talk about a random topic today, which is about feminism. And we're going to see whether it's possible for a Muslim to claim that he or she is a feminist. Now, I know this is a all-male gathering, and this is one of the reasons why they're taking it today. So, what's it called? There were a couple of sisters who wanted to listen to this lecture as well. But apart from that, a lot of times what we do is we only talk about sisters' issues with sisters. So there'll be a gathering where it'll be sisters only, and there'll be a sheikh, and they'll be asking questions and talking about sexism and feminism and all the difficulties that they're going through in the society. But the brothers, they're not involved in this discussion. So
they're not there to see if they're doing anything wrong and they need to correct themselves, or whether, you know, they're just not involved at all. So it's important that sometimes we discuss these issues even amongst ourselves and see where we fit. Now, with feminism is an interesting discussion, because feminism is misunderstood, right? People don't have a correct understanding of what feminism is. So sometimes people will claim to be feminists and support feminism, and they don't know what they're supporting. And sometimes people will fight against feminism and say that feminism is something that's completely alien to Islam and there's no common ground whatsoever. And again, maybe they have an incorrect conception of what feminism is. So what I want to do in this speech is I want to look first, try to figure out what is feminism, and then see what the Islamic perspective on feminism is. See, is there any common ground with feminism and Islam, or are they two ideologies that are completely separate from each other and have no common ground whatsoever? All right? So this is what we're going to look at. Now, there's a book, or actually it's a article that you could refer to for more information. This is written by a teacher in Qom by the name of Mohammed Legenhausen. Have you heard of Mohammed Legenhausen before? Yeah, so he's a revert to Islam, but he's been Muslim longer than most of you have been alive, right? He was a university professor in the States. He taught philosophy, converted to Islam, and he actually moved to Qom. He's been in Qom for, you know, decades. You know, for a long... He was in Qom over 10 years when I was there, and I was there a long time ago. So he's been in Qom for forever. He teaches at Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi's Institute, and he teaches philosophy there now. Right? So he's very good. And this is an issue that he wrote about. It's in English. His first language is English, of course. And it's called Islam versus Feminism. It's online, you could find it. It'd be good to refer to it if you want. Now, one of the first things we need to do is we need to distinguish between movements that are seeking women's rights, so we'll call them women's movements, and feminism. Right? Because they're two separate things. At least feminism could be considered one type of women's movement. But all types of women's movements aren't feminist, right? So women have been oppressed for, you know, probably almost since the beginning of time. They've been oppressed in almost every society, in almost every country. And there have been women and men who have rose up to try to fight against this oppression, right? And we call those women movements. Now, Islam could be considered a women's movement. Islam is probably one of the biggest and most successful women's movements that's ever been seen in the history of mankind. Right? If you look at some of the heroes of feminism, right? The heroes of Western women's movements. So I don't know anyone in Australia, but there's one person in the States, her name is Susan B. Anthony. They have a coin made from her. And all she did was fight for women's right to vote. And she didn't even succeed. She just took it one step closer, right? And because of her efforts and her struggles, she became a hero and what's it called, the face of women's movements. Now, if you look at the Prophet, our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. If you look at him, you look at the society that existed before him, and the change that he implemented in the society with regards to women. Huge changes. Right? In the age of ignorance before him, women were killed at birth, buried alive. Women were considered property. Right? They'd be in lists of property, you know, they were considered animals. Right? They weren't considered full human beings. They had no rights to property. They had no political rights, no social rights, nothing. And the Prophet came, and in 23 years, completely changed the society. He gave them political rights, ownership rights, what's it called, the right to live, and all other rights, you know, that are necessary for a human being. So the amount of good that he did for women is almost unparalleled in history, right? So you could see Islam as a women's movement. Now, plenty of Western women's movements which are famous, like is that the right to vote was a big one in many Western countries. They call them suffrage movements, right? Those are well documented, and you could research those if you want. I don't want to talk about the history of women's movements. But you have feminism. Feminism is also a women's movement. Right? It's a movement trying to secure rights for women. Now, there is one thing that feminists fight for that other women's movements don't. And that is equality of social roles. So other women's movements are trying to fight for political rights or social rights. Or they're trying to say women are oppressed and let's, you know, free them from this oppression. Feminism agrees with all of those points, and they add that there should be no difference in the roles that a man and a woman play in society. Right? There should be no gender roles. Right? They shouldn't have specific roles for men and specific roles for women. And this is completely different to Islam. So Islam encourages gender-specific roles. Feminism encourages, what's it called, no gender-specific roles, right? So it's a huge difference. Now, when we look at feminism, we could look at it on a sociological level, we could look at it on a philosophical level, on a political level, but today what we're going to do is we're going to look at it on a theological level. We're going to try to see what is the feminist theological ideology? Right? And then from there we're going to compare that with Islam. But we're going to see if there's any aspects of it which is compatible with Islam. Now, before we start, we have to acknowledge that there's many different types of feminism out there. So there's not just one word feminism which encompasses all feminist thoughts. Right? There's many different feminist movements with completely different ideologies. Right? The thing that they all have in common is the equality of social roles, right? That's the feminist, you know, that's the distinguisher of feminist movements. Theologically, there's two main camps. There's a moderate feminist camp and a radical feminist camp. And they both have different ideologies. So, first of all, feminist theology started not too long ago in the 1970s. So about 46 years ago, not incredibly long. And one of the most influential feminists of that time was a woman by the name of Mary Daly. And she wrote a book which was called Beyond God the Father. right? And this book, she actually studied Catholicism. She reached high levels of, you know, academic Catholicism, and she was the first woman to reach those levels. And then once she reached them, she fought against the church and wrote this book, and, you know, she probably was a feminist already, but she expressed herself as a feminist. Now, their theological ideology is liberationist, right? So liberational religion is a religion that tries to free a certain segment of population from oppression, right? So Karl Marx, who's a, you know, sociologist, he attacks religion, saying that religion was created to suppress those who are oppressed, right? To suppress people, right? So the ruling class uses religion to suppress, you know, the lower class, right? Feminists have an opposite view. They say, no, religion is for the people that are oppressed to liberate themselves from this oppression, right? So, for instance, people who are poor, impoverished in society, religion is used to help them liberate themselves from poverty, right? Women who are oppressed, right? Feminist theology is meant to liberate women from the oppression that they face in society. And as I said, there was moderate and radical. So the moderate feminist theology advocates a number of things. First, they advocate a reinterpretation of religion, which purges all types of sexist elements from religion. Right? So, for instance, in Islam, there's a movement of some women who don't want to wear hijab. And what they're doing is they're trying to create a choice for hijab. They're saying hijab is not wajib, right? It's a choice. If a woman wants to wear it, great, wear it. But she shouldn't be forced to wear it. She shouldn't be it shouldn't be religiously obligatory or compulsory for her to wear the hijab. And you see, this is the movement in the West, of course. I haven't seen this movement in the East, but in the West, this movement has gained traction so much that if you read news articles, whenever a news article in a Western newspaper, for whatever reason, mentions the word hijab, they'll always say that it's not a compulsory element of Islam. Right? Just that sentence is their movement, where they're trying to give women a choice, meaning that if they don't wear hijab, they're not disobeying religion. Why? Because if women have to wear hijab and men don't, that's sexist. So the moderate feminist is trying to take, what's it called, hijab from being compulsory to being mustahab, or to being a choice. Right? This is one instance of feminism. Another thing that they do is they concentrate on the history of the church. So most feminist movements started in the West, and they attacked the church, not Islam. Right? So they look at Islam now, but throughout history they've been looking at the church. And they say that the moderate feminist says that the church, right, has distorted the religion. The religion was pure, and the religion was not sexist. The religion was good. And then the church came, which was male-dominated, and the church allowed this patriarchal culture to overtake their practices and led to the suppression and oppression of women. So it's not the religion, it's the institutions that run the religion that have a problem. Right? Now, in Islam, we could see things similar to that. So in our countries, in Eastern, well, not mine, but in your countries, in Eastern countries, you have countries that are very male-dominated, countries that oppress women, right? Not following Islam, out culturally, outside of Islam, right? So, example, which I'm sure many of you have heard this before, but in Islam, women are not supposed, well, they can if they want, but they're not forced to do housework, they're not forced to do laundry, They're not forced to cook. They're not forced to take care of the kids. There's no Islamic law that says women must take care of these duties. Rather, the opposite. According to Islamic law, the husband is responsible for all of those duties. To such an extent that if the wife decides, you know what, I don't want to do any of this, I just want to sit down and watch TV all day, the husband would be forced to either do it himself, or if he's at work and can't do it himself, he would have to hire a maid or a nanny or someone to take care of these duties. Right? There's nowhere in Islam that says that it's permissible for the husband to force his wife to do these duties. Now, on the other side of the coin, if the wife does do this with the correct intention, it's considered worship. She gets rewards. She gets like huge amounts of rewards for her acts of kindness by taking care of the house. Right? Whereas a husband, it's his duty. For her, it's recommended. It's mustahab. She gets all kinds of rewards. Right? But in Eastern culture, does that exist? No. In Eastern culture, the woman is expected to do the housework, to clean, to take care of the children. She's expected. If she doesn't, there's something wrong with her. She's not a good wife. If she doesn't, she's looked down upon society. If she doesn't, in some cases, the man's allowed to beat her and hit her to make her do it. Right? And we see that here in these instances, what's happening is culture is overstepping the religion. Right? So this is something that a moderate feminist would look at and critique. Right? Now, third thing that moderate feminists advocate for is that God should not be referred to in the masculine form. Right? So again, most of their work is with Christianity. And in Christianity, you have that Trinity, right? So Father and Son and Holy Spirit. Father is male, Son is male, right? So the moderate feminists say we should use gender-neutral terms. So we should call him Father and Mother, right? They say that. Now, when it comes to Arabic, because Arabic doesn't have a gender-neutral pronoun, we're forced to use, you know, either a male or female pronoun, and according to the language, we use a masculine pronoun. But Islam, of course, rejects God having a gender. God's not male or female, right? So in this instance, you know, our ideology is similar. Now, that was the moderate feminist. The radical feminist is radical. They're extreme, right? Their views are different. So the radical feminist, they advocate for a complete rejection of patriarchal religion. So the moderate one wanted to reinterpret religion. They wanted to purge religion from sexist elements. Right? Whereas the radical feminist says, no, we need to get rid of male-dominated religion altogether. And in its place, we need to put female-dominated religion. So it shouldn't. So it's not referring to God gender neutral. It's referring to God in the feminine form. So worshiping a goddess, right? And this is what they advocate for. So not a god, but a goddess. They also reject equality. So you might say, wait a second, doesn't feminism fights for equality? No. Radical feminism doesn't believe in equality. They're gynocentric. Is a term that they use, where they think that women should be on top in this society, right? So right now, men are on top and oppress women. They think that in reality, that should be switched. It shouldn't be equal. Women should have the higher hand, right? As I said, these are radicals. This is radical feminism. Mary Daly was a radical feminist. I mentioned her. The title of her book, Beyond God the Father, now makes sense. Right? We need to go beyond God being male. He needs to be female. Right? She says in this book, if God is male, then male is God. Right? And it needs to change. God needs to be female, so female could be God. This is their ideology, which is completely in contradiction to ours. Now, let's look at Islam. So first of all, common ground between Islam and feminism. There is common ground. There's actually a lot of common ground. Right? So both Islam and a feminist condemn oppression of women. Right? This is one thing that both Islam and feminists agree upon. Right? Now, of course, Islam is attacked as a religion that oppresses women. So us just saying that we don't oppress women, you know, they would not accept that. Right? They would say, no, you do oppress women. Now, today I'm not going to look into different laws in Islam and try to rationalize them. That's not the purpose of this speech. Maybe in other speeches, in other locations. But right now I just want to introduce some issues. So one of the things that they attack Islam with is divorce. Right? And I'll touch upon it here and I'll touch upon it a little bit later as well. Now with divorce, the man has the right to divorce a woman and according to Islam for whatever reason he wants. But a woman doesn't have the right to divorce his man or divorce her husband except under certain conditions. Right? So there's a difference between when it's permissible for a man and a woman to divorce his or her spouse. And a feminist says that that is wrong. That's sexist. That's not equal rights. There's something wrong here. Right? So one of the issues, though, is that what feminists do and what Muslims do, a lot of times Muslims, we do this as well, is we will pick one ruling out, focus on that ruling, and we won't take a holistic approach to religion. So we'll take five rulings out and we'll attack these five rulings. And we don't look at Islam as a whole, as a overall system. Right? And this is a problem. Now with regards to divorce, there's an interesting tradition from the Prophet that we have. Where the Prophet addresses mankind, Ya ayyuhan nas, O people, fear Allah regarding women. And he's talking about after marriage, so he's talking about the way that you treat women. Right? Fear Allah for how you treat your women, your wife. Right? For you've taken them in trust from Allah. Right? So here you have a tradition that the Prophet is warning you that if you mistreat your wife, you should fear Allah. You should be scared. Because Allah is not going to take that lightly. Now some of our ulama take this tradition and derive a principle from it, where they say that from this tradition, we understand that a religious authority should have the right to intervene when a husband and wife, or when a husband is oppressing his wife. Even if that husband isn't breaking any of those, what's it called, outer shell laws of Islam. Right? Even if all of those laws which create this outer shell are intact, but under the surface of those laws, he's oppressing his wife. In this case, a religious authority should have the, what's it called, the authority to be able to come in, intervene, and split the couple up if that's what they want. Right? And that's huge. This is big. And this is one of the reasons why we need to look at religion holistically. You can't just look at one law, you have to look at everything, right? Now, another thing that feminism and Islam have in common is they both agree that women should have property rights, right? But that's simple, we're not going to get into that. And the third one is that they both reject fatherhood or maleness for God, which we touched upon as well, right? So both feminism, or at least moderate feminism, they don't accept that God should be male. And so do we. We don't accept he should be male either, but of course not female as well. Right? He's completely genderless, and that's an easy one. Now, one interesting argument that I was reading, though. So, a lot of feminists say that God should be feminine. So the radical feminists say that God should be feminine because the feminine characteristics are divine. Right? So, for instance, I'll show it in this what's it called, study. So, non-Muslim person, right, looked at Islam in this way. So he compared Islam to Christianity. He said that in Christianity we have a Trinity, right, where we have God the Father and the Holy Spirit, and all these are three components of God, and they're all male dominated. Whereas in Islam, you don't have a trinity, but you have the 99 attributes of God. Right? Now, of course, we know theologically that these 99 attributes are one and the same. That there's not 99 components of Allah that are separate and distinct from one another. We know that that's wrong. So the basis of his argument is completely wrong. So whatever he says, whatever conclusions he gets, we don't accept. But it was still interesting when I was reading it. He said that in Islam, Muslims say that the mercy of Allah outweighs his wrath. Right? We say that. Now mercy is a feminine characteristic, and wrath is a masculine characteristic. So in Islam, God leans more towards the feminine side than masculine, which of course we reject. But it's an interesting conversation that he was having. And I thought you could look into it. It was interesting for me. Now, the major difference though, between Islam and feminism, and the difference that we can't overlook, is the issue of gender roles. Right? So remember, the distinguishing factor of feminism from other women's movements is that feminists say that there should be equal roles in society for men and women. Where Islam says no, there's a difference. Right? There's gender-specific roles, and this is a huge difference here. Now, in Islam, we say men and women are equal in humanity, in being human. Right? We don't. A man is not more human than a woman, and a woman is not more human than a man. We share humanity equally. Right? And of course, Allah will look upon us and judge us, right, the same. The only thing that distinguishes amongst people is piety, is taqwa. Right? Race doesn't distinguish. What's it called? Social economic status doesn't distinguish. Age doesn't distinguish. Gender doesn't distinguish. Only piety. Right? So this is clear. So in the way that we're judged from Allah, we're equal. In our humanism, we're equal. Right? But we're not the same. Right? Apart from the obvious physical differences, there's many other differences with regards to men and women, psychological differences, right, that are established. So if you look, you know, don't take it from me. Go find, you know, some non-Muslim academic, psychologist, scientist, whoever, biologist, go find him or her and ask them about the differences between men and women. And you could sit there for days listening to them talk about the hundreds and hundreds of differences that men and women have from each other. Right? So much so that in psychology, if you don't, what's it called? In a experiment, if you don't separate gender, right, it's not accepted. You have to separate gender to see how men react to the situation and women react to the situation, because normally it's different. Right? I just listed a few things, but seriously, study this. There's so much out there. One was puberty, and this is one of the reasons for women becoming baligh before men, is that women reach puberty on average 2 years earlier than men do. Right? The lifespan of women is longer. So they live 5 years longer throughout the world, but in war-torn areas, that becomes more extreme as well. Right? And this is actually one of the reasons, or one of the rationalizations for polygamy, right, where they say that there's more women in the society than men, and if all men only had one wife, then there'd be a number of women who aren't married, and they won't be able to have a family. Right? As I said, I'm not trying to rationalize anything here, but this is one of the arguments that's used. Emotions, right? Women score higher on tests of emotional intelligence, meaning that they're able to gauge the emotional state of a person they're communicating with, you know, more correct than men and faster than men, right? And after that, they're able to empathize with them better, right? So women have higher levels of emotional intelligence. Women also are 2 times more likely to suffer from depression or anxiety than men. And men are more likely to suffer from addiction, whether it be alcohol or drug or gambling or any type of addiction, than women are. Right, so there's clear differences here. Now, what do these differences mean? What does this have to do with the conversation? So what Islam says is, look, these differences exist. If we were to say that despite these differences, men and women are expected to do the exact same thing. Whatever is expected of a man is expected of a woman, and vice versa. Right? What we'd be doing is we'd be neglecting their strengths and weaknesses. Rather, Islam creates a system where the society could benefit from the strengths of men and women. And then their weaknesses are, what's it called, made up for. Right? So Islam says it would be unfair for men and women to have the same social responsibility. It would be unfair because you'd be taking these biological and psychological differences out of the equation. And that doesn't make sense. Right? So this is why Islam says that. Now, with regards to human sexuality, which is another subject or field that Islam has attacked big time about, right? Islam and feminism differ here a lot. And it's interesting though. Now that we're all men, it's easy to talk about this stuff. But Islam has been attacked with regards to sex for centuries. Right? So in the Victorian era, Islam was attacked for being a naughty religion. For being a religion that promoted sexuality. Which Islam does. Right? Sexuality in Islam is restricted. But within that box of restriction, it's encouraged. Right? There's nothing. Sexuality is not only considered permissible, but it's recommended, and different types of sexual actions are discussed by the imams and encouraged. Right? So within that box of restrictions, there's encouragement. Whereas in the Victorian era, sex was considered dirty, negative, satanic. Right? It was bad. So Islam was looked at a religion that was like promiscuous, or it was naughty, for lack of better words. Right? Now that the West completely changed their ideology, now Islam is attacked for those restrictions. Right? So the flip script. Now it's not naughty enough. Now because of these restrictions, now there's too much problem. Right? And it's very interesting. One of the examples that I could give with regards to clothing only, right? In the 1920s, 30s, 40s in the United States, they would have patrols who would go to beaches and they would measure the bathing suits that women are wearing, right? They had to be, or they weren't allowed to be X amount of inches or centimeters above the knee. And they would take a measuring stick and measure, how far their bathing suit is above the knee or not. And if it was too far, they'd send them home or whatever they do to them. Right? Now you see in France, they banned the burkini, or the Muslim female bathing suit. They banned it. See the opposite spectrum here. And think about that, because I was actually contemplating that for a while. Women could wear a swimming cap. That's not bad. Women could wear a t-shirt. That's not bad. Women could wear men swimming shorts that are shorts below the knee. That's not bad. Right? So think of a woman, right, non-Muslim woman, wearing a swimming cap, a shirt, and what's it called? Long swimming trousers. The only part of her body that would be showing would be from, up until about the middle of her calf and her neck. So basically, France is banning covering your neck and the bottom of your leg. That's it. Right?
Why?
And then you should see the excuses that they make. There's some of them are pretty funny. Like, oh, it's not hygienic. Right? For who? The fish? It's not hygienic? What do you mean? Right? It's not hygienic. What are you talking about? Right? They're clearly attacking Islam. Right? They're attacking modesty. Right? Now, of course, it's because they're saying women are oppressed and they're forced to wear hijab. But what they're doing is they're, by banning it, they're taking that choice away from a woman. If there's a woman, which there, of course, there's many women, who decide that they want to cover their hair, they want to be modest, this is their choice. No one's forcing them. Right? France is now taking that out of the equation, and that's wrong. Right? And it's un-Western. Right? So if you it's against Western ideals. So it's something that's very easy for us to use and attack. Right? If we're able to articulate it well, no one can argue against us with this. Right? It's just interesting. Now, with regards to that point about cultural problems though, in Islamic society this exists. And I touched upon that earlier. In our societies, men take advantage of women. Not only our societies, in every society. But in Muslim societies, this does happen as well. Right? One example that could be given is the Taliban in Afghanistan. Right? And this was in Western media. Western media was, you know, presenting this as one of the worst things ever, and it is bad. But the Taliban were prohibiting women from getting an education. Right? So they were stopping female education. Why? Because of segregation laws in Islam. So they were saying in the schools, girls and boys will mix. Right? They'll see one another. They'll be in the same class with one another. Of course, you can make gender separate schools, but I guess that didn't come across their minds. But what's it called? For whatever reason, because of the laws of segregation, right? That takes precedent over female education. And we know in Islam, yes, we do have laws regarding the segregation of sexes, or at least the interaction, right? There are laws. And we also have laws regarding education, or we have a hadith would say it's compulsory upon every man and woman to get an education. Right? So how do we mix them? Now, the Taliban said segregation comes first and denied a whole population of women the right to education, which was wrong. What about Shia though? What perspective do you think the Shia have? I'll give you a scenario. You guys know the country Turkey, right? It's a Muslim country. In Turkey, it's prohibited to wear the hijab in university. So if a muhajjaba, a woman who wears hijab, wants to study something in the university, get a higher education, she has to take her hijab off. Right? This is mandatory. It's against the law to wear hijab in the university. So, what's the Islamic ruling here? Can a woman go to the gate of the university wearing hijab, take her hijab off, and wear like a turtleneck sweater, long sleeves, long pants, cover everything except for her hair. Right? Go into university, get the education, go to class or whatever, go to their tutorials, go to the library, study, and then when she leaves the university, she puts her hijab back on and goes home. Would that be permissible? Yeah. Right? You would have one side, you would say it's haram to uncover your hair. That's a sin. Other side, you see, well, if they don't do that, then they're being prevented formal education, higher education. So I remember when I was in Qom, some of the Turkish students went to the offices of the Muraja and they asked them this question. And the Muraja said that in this case, it's permissible for a woman to go to university and uncover her hair for those hours that she's in university and then cover. Why? Because if you disallow that and No Muslim religious woman gets a higher education. After a couple generations, the status of religious people in the society would fall down. Right? They would be uneducated. Whereas other segments of the population would be educated. And this would cause the religious people to become poor in society. It would cause them to become the lower class. And it would harm them socially. So in order to prevent that, they allowed women to take the hijab off for those few hours that they're in university. And I thought that was very interesting. Right? It's a very interesting perspective. And not all Maharaja agree with that. It's a certain few.
Isn't the main
Maharaja? Mainstream Maharaja, yes. Mainstream Maharaja in Qom. Yeah. So, now, but that's what I just want to mention. Culture is interesting. Shaheed Mutahhiri has a statement with regards to marriage, right? So, in our cultures, in Eastern cultures at least, from what I, you know, I don't really understand Eastern culture that well, apparently, but from what I've seen, I see that sometimes men or fathers and cultures prevent women from getting divorced. Right? So I don't know if you've heard this before. I've heard it plenty of times. Where a father will say, my daughter will not return to my house unless she's in a body bag. Meaning that there's no way that she will be able to get a divorce from her husband and come back to my house. No matter what her husband is doing to her. He's beating her, he's whatever it is, that's it. There's no such thing as divorce. I don't know if you guys have seen this. I have. I've seen it in Lebanese culture, I've seen it in Pakistani culture, I've seen it in many different cultures. Right? Where a woman is forced to stay in a very difficult situation, and then not on top of that, it's said to her that it's your jihad. It's your struggle to stay in this situation where you're oppressed, to take the oppression and to push through and just live your life. This is jihad and you'll be rewarded for it in the hereafter. Does Islam say that? Is that the Islamic perspective on the situation? It's the cultural perspective, but is that in line with Islam or not? Right? Shaheed Mutahhiri says this. He says, with regards to marriage, culture dictates that a woman, and the word here, culture, not Islam, culture. Culture dictates that a woman must bear such calamities as a terminal cancer patient would. Meaning that she has to bear a life that's unbearable. And she doesn't have the right to exit, to free herself. Right? She must bear it. Culturally, she must bear it. And then he advocates that there should be women's rights movements and organizations set up to combat that, to fight that, that this cultural practice is wrong, right? He says that these groups should focus on two things: changing misplaced cultural practices, one, and implementing the spirit of Islam, two. So when you look at culture and you see that culture oversteps Islam in certain areas, and in those areas oppresses either women or whoever else, then you need to remove that culture from our societies. And to remove a culture is difficult. It takes a movement. But we need to recognize it and try to free our societies from these forms of oppression. And two, we need to go beyond that outer shell of Islam. Right? And we need to implement the spirit of Islam in our relationships, in our marriages, in our interactions with our children, in our interactions with each other on a wider scale. Right? If we do that, then a lot of these issues will be solved in and of themselves. Right? Now, as I said at the beginning, we're men talking about this here. There's no women present. Right? These organizations need to be run by women. We can't come as men and say, okay, we're going to make a women's organization and we're going to not have any women at all to, you know, on board, or we have no idea what their problems are, and we're going to dictate what your problem is and how to solve your problem. And that's not the case. Right? But a lot of times, as I said at the beginning as well, you'll have groups where women's groups are formed and then they speak amongst themselves and men never hear it. So all the problems that women face in the society and the community go unheard to men, and men have no idea what's happening. There has to be middle ground there. There has to be organizations where we work together to try to eradicate these problems, right? And inshallah, that was basically the purpose of the speech here, was to look and see what feminism is, try to define it, because as I said at the beginning, a lot of times we have a misconstrued conception of what feminism actually is. So let's define it, and we did that, and we saw that the main distinguishing factor between feminism and other women's group movements was their insistence on equal social roles in the society. Right? Other things Islam could agree. Islam agrees that we shouldn't oppress women. Women should not be oppressed in society. What's it called? Property rights. Islam agrees with God being genderless. Islam agrees with... There's many commonalities. The thing that Islam doesn't agree with is that Islam says there should be gender-specific roles because men and women are different. We have different physical and psychological... existences. We're different. And because of these differences, we should have different roles. Right? And then I wanted to highlight that our cultures do oppress women. And it's not only Muslim culture, it's all cultures. Right? Women are oppressed throughout the world, even in the West. Right? But it's something that is wrong. And as Muslims, we should stand up and try to fight oppression wherever it is. So if it's women being oppressed, then we should try to help the situation and try to free them from the yokes of oppression. Right? Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.